My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch Roundup Quarter 1, 2024.
Gary, I see some doggies here and they got to get along. Which...
Yes. Yeehaw. We're shepherds of the West. Why don't people ride cows?
Pretty wide. I think it'd be pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, if you're a pussy. if you can't do the splits.
Yeah, you could ride a cow side saddle. I think one of the main reasons people don't ride cows is that they don't go very fast. They don't go very fast unless they're real mad.
Yeah, I'm just a cow. I don't go very fast or very far.
Yeah, yeah. I think as far as unguents go, it's not one of the main ones you want to ride.
And a bull you can ride. But it's a challenge.
Right, you know? Right. It's an expert horse.
Yeah, like horse boys, not cowboys.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. If you're going to be called a cowboy, ride a cow.
For God's sake.
For God's fucking sake. We're going to get here and we're going to start. We're doing some overflow here. I'm going to get started here with Ethan. Ethan says, do either of you have any video game dialogue routines you go through with your friends or maybe just in your own head? My friend and I both got into RE4 around the same time in high school. And sometimes we'll just jump into the Krauser Leon knife fight dialogue from RE4 OG unprompted. One of us just has to say something like, I died in a crash 2 years ago. Is that what they told you? And we're off. Obviously, it's pretty dorky, but video game dialogue is often so surreal and inhuman that it'll stick in your head.
Anytime, it's only in the context of doing a show, because if I did this in real life, people wouldn't want to be around me.
You get the chair.
Yeah. Sorry. God, one of the best deliveries. You want it to, Marge, admit it. No, but anytime somebody says a bomb, in my head, my response to it is a bomb. J.C. Denton. It's real simple. It's not a whole routine or anything. It's more of like a little mental tic that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. Those things count. Mm-hmm. Me and Will do I spill my drink from Deus Ex as well. The bar with the Russian guy who screams that. Me and Derek do a lot of these.
Okay.
When we were younger, we used to do Setzer from Final Fantasy VI. Like, you know, it'd be like, hey, do you want to go to the movies? And then we'd be like, my life's just a chip on your pile. Any up. But then eventually we graduated to Gabriel Knight.
Oh, yes.
And now we can do basically all of Gabriel Knight 1 and 2 at any time. There's a lot of, what, you know, can you tell me about Damballa?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, Gabriel Knight's a good one.
Yeah. Beautiful game, beautiful man. Put him in Smash.
Naveen asks, how do you handle the come down after playing an all-timer game? I finally got around to Disco Elysium recently, and it more than lived up to the hype. But now, nothing I'm playing feels like it measures up. It doesn't feel fair to a game like Sea of Stars, which is itself a lovely throwback RPG, but I feel like I'm unfairly grading it on a curve because it doesn't have nearly the same quality of writing, nor the gameplay systems needed to support said writing. Any tips on recalibrating after my bender in Martinez?
You have to switch genre.
Oh, you have to play something with no writing at all.
Yeah, yeah. That's the trick. So when we did Dark Souls, I remember like episode one of Dark Souls being like, I don't know how I'm going to go back to like God of War after this. And then after a long enough time, I was like, I could play a button mashy God of War.
Yeah.
I just had to play a lot of games that I didn't make comparisons with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the same thing happens with writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a game, like I would have a hard time going from Disco Elysium to Sea of Stars, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I would go and play Isaac for a while or something that like just didn't care about writing, that focused on things that Disco Elysium isn't interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. That was exactly going to be my advice, is to get yourself a palate cleanser of some kind, you know. Maybe also like, I don't know, like go read a good book or something.
Yeah.
To like, I don't know. It's almost like you're tricking a dog into running after one thing.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, okay. This absolutely blew out what it feels like video games are possible. Like, show me that it's capable here. Maybe I need to like trick myself into thinking, all right, well, that's a book. That's a book thing.
Yes.
And I can't be disappointed when a video game doesn't give me that all the time.
You really didn't set yourself up for success switching immediately to Sea of Stars.
Yeah.
Like, as a, you know, just a thing that is going to have, you know, for what, you know, I've read things about Sea of Stars. I haven't played it. Mm-hmm. I know it has plenty of fans. It is very explicitly a throwback to a simpler time of writing. And it is apparently very slavish in its homages to a very specific game. It's going for a different thing. Like, it is not trying to be literary.
Yeah.
It's trying to be a nostalgia exercise for a specific period.
Yeah.
Different goals.
You got to be in a frame of mind for that. Otherwise, every time somebody talks, it's going to feel like they're wasting your time.
Yes. Yeah. Alex says, which WoW games have you come back to the most frequently or most fondly after covering them for the show? Conversely, which WoW games can you barely remember that you've played because the game was just that unmemorable? Any after suffering stuff that you've revisited for fun? Everyone should play The Looker.
Everyone should play The Looker. For me, the one I go back to most frequently is Frostpunk.
Mm-hmm.
That is already a kind of game that I really love, and that is a beautiful, it is a very good kind of expression of it. So, you know, Yahtzee, like I just go do that. As far as Aptic Suffering stuff I've gone back to, I think I did a stream of Contradiction at some point as well. Because that's just a really good mystery game. Yeah.
I haven't gone back to a lot of Abject Suffering stuff. You know, generally just because the stuff that is good, like we kind of cheat, like we do, like the Contradiction thing. And then WoW stuff, like all kinds of just things I played anyway. So I still play Monster Train, like from time to time, things like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of things I forget, everything else. the number of like we did do that. Me and Liv were watching Nickelodeon game shows after we had watched Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego,
right?
And I was like, oh shit, there's a Legend of the Hidden Temple movie. And I was like, oh, I've seen this. Like, we watched the trailer and I had this like, oh, I watched this. We talked about this for the show. Fuck. I remember this little dork. It's a pod disease. You forget everything.
Yeah. I was trying to think about other real-time strategy games that we've done in the past, since we're doing Age of Empires 2 right now as of recording. And I was like, wait, what the fuck is Lords of Magic?
Yeah, Lords of Magic. Remember Lords of Magic? We did that Warhammer one.
Yeah.
It's I like having played those, even if I don't remember them very well.
It
adds kind of like a texture, I feel like, to everything. I like that.
Yeah, it's not that I outright disliked those. I think there were interesting things about them. Also, it's, you know, just helped me chart a course with my relationship with army micromanagement RTSs.
Yeah, so you're not an RTS guy.
No,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah. It's interesting how they're different kinds of RTSs too. We're doing Age of Empires, and I'm having a harder time with it than I do a StarCraft, and that's because StarCraft is made for a more micro kind of scenario.
Yeah,
it's also real weird coming to it from playing a lot more Civilization.
Yes.
Which is a very different kind of concern. Mm. Like, I'm not disliking it. I think I will probably come off sunnier on it than you do as more of an RTS guy.
Yeah.
But it's real strange. It's useful to have those texture.
I also compulsively put 20 hours into it over the weekend.
Yeah. You fucked up.
Let's say 33% of which were depression reasons. So.
Yes. Yeah. We're snowed in here.
Let's see. Caleb writes, hey guys, first my squeaky wheel recommendation, Nier Automata, pushing it back
off.
A year. Yeah,
it's great every single time. It's great.
What year are we in now?
I think we're probably like 2050.
Okay, cool.
At this point, it's a game people like to recommend, so
yeah,
there's been a lot of them.
Mark your calendars.
I don't got anything going on in 2050. So, yeah, I don't know. My 2050 is looking pretty clear on Google.
Second, how do you feel about simulators such as DCS, Arma, Farming Sim, etc., and would you ever consider playing them? Given that they have at least some semblance of a story, of course, I found that Sims are my niche genre and curious how avid gamers like you view them. I don't know what DCS is.
I don't know what DCS is either. And I always think of Arma and Farming Sims as like different.
Yeah.
You know, I don't actually know. So I wish I had better catalog for this kind of question, but I haven't played very much.
Right.
Arma is like a Rust. Like, is that true?
Arma is like a very faithful and gritty
army sim.
Yeah. And yes. DCS is Digital Combat Simulator, okay. Which appears to be like, based on the images I'm seeing, like a lot of like plane and ship stuff.
Okay.
I imagine you would throw like flight simulators in there. Farming Sim seems to be not of a piece of the rest of these. Yeah.
Like a truck simulator or something like that. Yeah. I played a little bit of some of these. Like I played a little bit of, you know, trucks, Euro Truck Simulator, and I played a Farming Sim. I don't know if it's called Farming Sim.
Mm-hmm.
And had a degree of fun with it. I don't care about the military.
Right.
So that part's hard for me. Like, I don't get jazzed about the different tanks. There's like an ad that gets shown on YouTube for
always World of Tanks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different one than World of Tanks, but similar. You know?
Oh, is it that one that has all the national security leaks happening because of it?
No. Maybe. It's one that is very much about being able, like, modeling every model of tank throughout history.
Yeah.
But not just tanks, planes and stuff, too. It's not World of Tanks.
War Thunder is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that might be what I'm thinking of.
That's the one. Yeah. So you know the story about that, right?
Yeah.
For people,
I don't think I put the two together, but right. Yeah.
Like people in Discords in having arguments about like how accurate a given rendering of a tank is or how they work or whatever, they will just like, you know, you have people connected with, you know, the military, doing a defense, national security or whatever. They will just like post and leak documents about this shit.
Yes.
To like support or undermine people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah. I like these. These relax me. Big thing over the winter for me was playing Power Wash Simulator in VR. It's good. I like it. I have fucked around with like Lawnmower Simulator, played with some farm simulators, a few odds and ends. Obviously, they're varying quality. You know,
it's so weird, but though, because like that doesn't even feel like the same genre as Arma.
No, it really doesn't. No,
like I don't. I'm not trying to call out Caleb by any means. I'm having a feeling of unspecificity with the question.
Yeah. I'm latching onto the Farming Sim thing. I don't fuck around with DCS or Arma. Like, I've known about Arma. I know, like, you know, like Arma has a huge mod scene as well. Like, people have done full conversions. Like, Arma was the basis for zombie multiplayer server based game War Z or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I got confused and thought it was those. So I've fucked around a little bit with the lighter ones that are not combat related.
Yeah.
I've never gone real deep, with them. And I don't think either of us are into the military ones, but I don't really know the genre.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably with combat, that, you know, it's something where like, realism is never going to trump fun for me.
Yeah.
While understanding that there is absolutely, you know, there are absolutely people who, you know, relish being in a perfectly modeled cockpit for
good for them.
X, Y, or Z. Yeah.
You know, as I get older, I get more interested in just dumb shit like that. Like, you look at a big, you know, you're in a bookstore and there's like the World War II armaments of World War II section.
Oh, geez. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Maybe that'd be a thing. You know,
it's just George Costanza deciding to become a Civil War buff when he becomes unemployed.
Like, is this the kind of old man I'm going to become? Like, ooh, is this my digi future?
Yeah.
You know, I like to think no, but who knows, right?
Somebody has introduced like a slow acting dad poison into your system.
Yeah. It's called All My Cells Die. Like, it's called free radicals, dude. I'm dying. It's old, getting older. It doesn't seem so radical to me. Ethan says, hello. Since you've covered Bethesda games in the past and generally enjoyed them, I was curious if you played Starfield. If so, what are your thoughts? Understandable if you haven't gotten around to playing it, what with games like Baldur's Gate 3 coming out and playing them for the show. While I greatly enjoyed my time with Starfield, it definitely felt like one step forward, two steps back for Bethesda. Things like the writing have generally improved, not in all cases, but other things like exploration had a massive regression. It honestly boggles my mind how badly they bungled this key aspect of their gameplay. Most of their environmental storytelling Bethesda is known for is completely erased. Further proof, in my mind, that procedural generation doesn't work.
Or at least for that application, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't played this yet. I've heard mixed things. Most of what I have heard about it is that makes it sound more interesting to me. Mm-hmm. The main thing that has kept me off it is just I don't care about space.
Yeah.
And the idea of being like a spacer,
mm-hmm.
you know, like going out in space that's not a fantasy that's fun for me.
Yeah.
If this were in any other setting, like if this were just, you know, anything else, like I guess the other two settings that they do. I was going to say fantasy or post-apocalyptic, but like they got that pretty covered, I guess.
We've got all of the genders.
Yeah, I would be like, oh, cool. I get to explore cool ruined towers and shit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's just going to be tech walls. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to walk into a place and the walls are just going to be full of buttons that nobody knows what they do.
Yeah.
And that stuff just makes me feel exhausted.
The most interesting thing about like a space setting like that to me would be the like the flight combat kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that like Starfield is more about like going to planets and looking around and like maybe there's a space station or whatever. Like, I don't know. It just it does not tickle my fancy, I guess, in a way. I'm not as opposed to sci-fi as a setting as you are. It's just the cool thing you can do in that to me is be a pilot. So
our cuck for incident,
yes,
stuff is at play.
Yeah,
let's scoot on. Last time we spent way too much time in games and didn't get to topics. Let's scoot on to other stuff.
Let's do
this time.
Yes.
Yeah. What does Drew say?
Drew says, thoughts on music videos generally, or any favorite ones? I personally love how the bite-sized nature enables experimentation in a way that other visual mediums generally don't. To me, the right video has the ability to elevate an okay song into something great, and an already great song into something truly special. That said, most music videos are just kind of there and may as well be background noise. And the occasional deeply embarrassing videos never quite ruin a song for me, but they certainly create some questionable connections in my brain whenever I listen. Music videos. I like them. You know, I like them in all of their, you know, either being really cool and badass or being completely embarrassing. It is a form that I enjoy.
It doesn't affect, they never interface with music for me.
Right.
In a way, you know, so I'm never like, oh, this changes it. But I like music videos a lot. I listen to mm-hmm. music on YouTube a lot because I work at my computer.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times videos are on in the background. Mm-hmm. Tons of favorites. We did a whole show. We did Teenage Dirtbags about a bunch of bad music videos for a long mm-hmm. time, me and my friend Brayton. I'm a big fan of, this is something I got into like a couple of years ago, but it just mm-hmm. never made it onto Teenage Dirtbags because the show died.
Yeah.
There is a song by The Management called Little Dark Age.
Okay.
That has a very funny video. That is a lot of very like esoteric. It's kind of like, you know, a gothy sounding song and a lot of kind of creepy imagery that goes nowhere
mm-hmm.
In kind of a funny way.
Okay.
it's a very charming video. Like yeah. somebody, you know, catching somebody, you know, going into a haunted attic and there's somebody under a veil and they lift it up and it's them. And that plot line doesn't go anywhere. It's just a series of little scenes like that.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like eating a pomegranate menacingly. Like stuff like, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah. No. Like a lot of mine are just going to be like throwbacks, because the music videos don't really happen that much anymore, but like, mm. I don't know, the Eels have a bunch of very good, music videos. Like the one for, Cancer for the Cure is real neat. Last Stop This Town, just a bunch of songs nobody knows that I could lay out and, you know, maybe, yeah, four people would recognize, but yeah, I'm for 'em, not again 'em.
Yeah. Pro music video.
Yeah.
Caden says, hello from Ohio. Hope you're staying cozy as it gets colder. I know Alex Gary has mentioned watching Parks and Recreation. I love Parks and Rec. The town of Pawnee is kind of like Springfield from The Simpsons if everyone cared about each other. It makes me feel warm inside. Perhaps I particularly identify with the wholesome Midwestern town themes. Are you guys Parks enjoyers? If so, who are your favorite characters? Thank you and happy holidays. And there's a tiny Santa.
Oh.
Yeah, there's little Santa. He's mm-hmm. in your blood. delivering your gifts.
Now you're
platelets. I like Parks and Rec. I've watched mm-hmm. through it once. You know, it's not like I've seen like every episode of The Office a bunch of times.
Yeah,
I've seen every episode of Parks and Rec once. And I've seen the first couple seasons a few times.
Yeah,
I like it a lot. It's very funny. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Little hard
to go back to because it is so obviously an Obama era. You know, kind of
it loves thing. Biden.
Yeah,
like all the stuff about how hot Biden is so weird.
Yep, it doesn't just love Biden. There are also like a ton of I think there are at least pretty much everybody brought in is in some kind of scandal. Like here's John McCain. Not scandal, but just like so you're just gonna geek out about it. You're just gonna suck up to anybody who just happens.
They have a job. I think is cool. with no other additional information.
Yeah.
It is a little bit hard that way, and I think that the last season, while interesting, mm-hmm. went mildly treacly for me.
Yeah,
and then the final episode that they did during COVID with everybody calling in was pure treacle.
You could not have would have chewed my own leg off to get away from that.
Yeah, it was really hard to watch. But during its golden age, like seasons 2 through 4 or whatever, mm-hmm. it's super fucking funny.
Yeah.
I love the Saperstein's. I think the Saperstein's are consistently amazing.
Yeah, I was gonna say if we didn't bring up Jean Ralphio, at the very least,
and Councilman Jeremy Jam. I think is also really fun. John Glasser is, you got fucking jammed. All the Tammies, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally got to do that. They're in love and have lots of sex mm-hmm. in real life. And then they got to do this relationship where he is just absolutely transfixed by the pussy.
Yep.
to a hypnotic degree. That's so fun for them. I'm so happy for them.
what happened to your mustache? Oh, it rubbed off from the friction.
Yeah. It's just fucking incredible stuff.
Yeah.
The one where they're deprogramming Jeremy Jam and Amy Poehler does the impersonation. Like, let's go to the pet store bathroom and get gross. I got some wet naps. Let's get horny. it's very funny. It's a very funny show.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the three shows that were contemporaneous with it, like The Office, I watched the most, so I have the most affection for it. Mm-hmm. Like Parks and Rec, second most, and 30 Rock, third most, which is a show with 4 good characters and then 1,000 other characters who have never made me laugh once.
Yeah.
Every single time Judah Friedlander's on there, I'm like, fuck this show. This sucks.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Moving on. Andrew asks or says, I haven't looked yet. Hey, guys. Media question. Who are your favorite working actors these days? I'm always happy to see Jesse Plemons being slovenly and insouciant somewhere.
Yeah. I like Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons is just fine.
As a working actor. I have a good question for this because, or a good answer for this because I stopped watching stuff.
Yeah. All of my actors are way out of date is the thing.
Yeah, I feel bad about it, but it's the case.
Yes.
Happy when I hear somebody right now, since me and Liv have been watching Adventure Time, my game is like, whose voice is that?
Mm-hmm.
And then like seeing if I can guess it before the credits, but that's from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, ooh, Steven Root. I'm like, I guess. I don't even know. He's also probably still alive, but I don't know.
Oh, he's still alive. Steven Root's basically the free space on anything with voice acting. It's him and Dave Herman. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have good answers, sadly.
Yeah. Sadly, no. Everything would be kind of out of date.
I'm also at the point now where I'm just happy to see a guy I know.
Yeah, true.
I'm just like, ooh, recognize. There's a guy. Oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
It's that guy. I know that guy. And that's basically it.
I'll be happy to see Bill Hader in something.
Yeah. Bill Hader's very funny.
Yeah. Let's just say that.
Call it F-line in. Get an F-line session once a week.
Yeah.
Jordan or Maya says, I have COVID and I've just been sweating in bed and reading my new fixation, Delta Green Modules. I know you've talked about it before, but can you all talk about some sugar about how good ass Delta Green is? P.S. Much of the new post 2016 Delta Green content has been top of the pops in regards to Mythos content and adventure and horror design. We both like this.
Mm hmm.
I have a bunch of Delta Green modules.
Dental green.
I thought they outlawed that toothpaste. the when I go to the Lovecraft Film Festival, usually there's a tabletop ask booth set up. There wasn't this year, but I usually try to buy a Delta Green module because there's stuff you can't get in normal game stores. It's like very small press. This year they didn't have that, but I've love this stuff. Love reading it. Delta Green is sick. For people who don't know, it's modern Call of Cthulhu, but kind of mixed with X-Files. The original pitch. It's gotten a little less X-Files in the new edition, but that was the original pitch. Your government agents, as part of a secret government organization, investigating this stuff.
Kind of ends up like the more modern stuff feels like a little bit SCP, a little bit.
Yes.
Which is a good move for them to take. I really dig it. Like, and it's old. It's older than I remember being in high school. So let's say early 2000s and playing Delta Green stuff with my high school people that I played with. There's a lot of stuff. Everything that I have and that I've read has been more recent. So I've cited this quite a bit, but there's a 2019 Delta Green book called The Labyrinth, which is
not a module.
Yeah, not a module.
Still really cool.
Yeah, it's a source book about different organizations associated with the Outer Gods. Kind of get giving adventure hooks and ideas. And the one for Haster, where basically the King in Yellow is operating through anonymous
rules.
Rules is really good.
All of those are really good. The thing when I reread it recently, I really latched on to is the preppers who are way into breeding and wives.
Mm-hmm.
Where they slaughter Nyarlathotep as an angel to get metaphysical innocence, where they cannot be blamed for a thing. So when you're investigating it, all the evidence points to them being the murderer, but they have this metaphysical innocence where you're there has to be some other explanation. And everyone thinks that's fucking nuts.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's full of super cool ideas. The sad thing about that is it's split up between allies and enemies.
Yeah.
None of the allies are cool.
No.
So half the book sucks. But the other half is the coolest source book shit I've ever read. It's pretty nuts. This stuff is really cool. If you're what if this Eldritch demon was a computer virus? The kind of old stuff. And then the newer stuff is a little bit more SCP, but we're both into it.
Yeah, for sure. Big fans. I could name more specific ones, but it's probably worth moving on to the next one.
Yeah.
Joy Sweeper says, "Hi, recent patient going through adaptation decay. I enjoyed the episode."
Recent patient.
He
said recent patient.
Sorry. I was distracted. I forgot to say to Jordan or Maya, I hope you've gotten over COVID. I hope you're feeling better. That's where my mind was at that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. trying to figure out
Jordan is the recent patient.
Yes.
Yes, you decided to subliminally slip it in there rather than say it. Keep bacon, audience. No. No, I know. I'm just teasing you.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Joy Sweeper says, "Hi. Recent patron going through adaptation decay. I enjoyed the episode on the first Silent Hill film, but I was waiting the whole time to hear you bring up the reasoning why the director, Christoph Gans, cast a woman as the lead. He said that when playing the first game, which this adapts, quote, you can see that the characters behave more like women than like men. They are worried about the child. They are very sensitive and often cry. I always found this hilarious and baffling. Do men in his world not worry about their children and freak out when bewildering and horrible things happen to them? A Silent Hill with a Harry who behaves more like a man even be like? Is he imagining Liam Neeson in a Liam Neeson and Taken situation? Probably wouldn't be any worse than Silent Hill Ascension, to be honest."
I don't remember picking up on that. I didn't when I was reading about it. That is stupid.
It's misogynist is what it is.
It's misogynist, but I think it's more than that. Something that I've had popping in my head recently and you know, this is just for Gary. So I'm not trying to tell anybody how to live. Mm-hmm. One thing I've been really, rankling against lately are using gender as a descriptor. Because I don't think, I've talked about this before on shows. I think applying a virtue to a gender is stupid.
Yeah.
It's not feminine to be sensitive. It's just sensitive. There's already a word for that. And yeah, that's already a virtue. You know, it's not masculine to be like, I don't know, whatever masculine signifier you want to have. Like,
be aggressive. It's just
aggressive. Or be like assertive. Yeah. You know, if you wanted to make it sound like a virtue. You know, that's not, that's just assertion. It's already a thing. It doesn't have to be. Why do we have to gender? It reminds me that I was like learning Portuguese and I was like, why are apples ladies? This doesn't make any fucking sense. It's an apple.
Manzana. Like, you have to say it. Yeah.
Manzanita. Small lady apple. I'm like, it's just a fucking apple. I don't know. I in a future world where we just, everything is they, and we don't do this anymore. I'd be pretty into it. I don't want to take anything away from anybody who enjoys gender expression and who, you know, but just for Gary, I'm trying to eliminate this sort of thing from my vocabulary.
It,
I think it's stupid.
It's pretty, I don't want to say lazy, but it's not very rigorous thought when you when you are expressing yourself or trying to conceptualize things. Yeah.
It's not describing anything.
No.
It's like, it offends me on a level of it being inaccurate.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good use of words to make something, to describe something.
I'm really surprised that I didn't bring that up in that episode, because that is a famous anecdote about it, and it's one of the most misguided things that could possibly be said.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid. Like, he's not unique in that, right? Nope. Like, you see stuff all the time where they're like, oh, this character, this seems more like a lady perspective and stuff. And, like, one of the things I think about is how whenever, you know, obviously damseling is bad, but the other side of that is like, you never have a story about a lady who does anything to help a guy or help a partner, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily a guy, but like, I think about that and I'm like, you know, if I got kidnapped by goblins or whatever, Liv would do something about it. Why is there not that story? You know, I don't know. Get gender the fuck out of here. and again, not telling anybody, if you take comfort from it, it's dangerous ground. There are people who have different relationships with gender than I do.
Yeah,
I understand all that. But for me, I don't know. I'm kind of sick of it.
It's only useful as far as it's useful, you know, and that is, you know, personal thing. But as far as making a choice about your movie, you can have a better reason for it than, you know, than that.
Your movie or your stories, you know, just in general, because it comes up in games as well. Comes up in everything, and it's just silly.
Yeah.
Meet a person who is the opposite gender. Like, you know, I don't know.
Once.
Yeah, just once. Like, it's just like, I don't know, dudes care about their kids. Fucking idiot. Mm-hmm. Moving on to show questions. Glucos says, hi guys. The recent months of WAF have been some incredible content discussion. For a question, I wanted to ask, what are some of your favorite running jokes or examples of shorthand between the two of you? There's a problem in the bathroom. It's something I find myself muttering in the day-to-day. How do you feel about the dialect you developed as a creative partnership? And do you ever worry that presents a barrier to new listeners? Keep up the good work.
No, I never worry about that. It's too fun. Everything we do has to be fun or else it's going to be less attractive to do.
Yeah, I'm sure it does present a barrier. And sometimes people ask, we did that Ductionary episode. I think we should do more of those.
Yeah, we should.
And it's a good idea. We're not trying to be exclusionary. It just, you talk to somebody enough, you get shorthand. It happens regardless of the context, what you're talking to them, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's useful. I like it. And, you know, it is, you know, goofy stuff like, you know, the Simpsons quotes and references that very specifically apply to and describe, you know, particular things. It's not just saying it for the sake of saying it. You know, it can also be like the actual, like, analytical vocabulary that we've come up with, you know, the perennial example being like, oh, talking about games in terms of verbs. What am I doing in this?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and even though there's a problem with the toilet isn't just a funny thing, it's describing a situation.
Yes.
You know, or a potential situation. Like, it's not just saying dental plan. You know? If you're saying dental plan, you can't just be saying, referring to dental plan. You have to be talking about a situation in which somebody's repeating something so often that it becomes this like catchy mantra. You know, like it's the meta about what it's about,
you know, or it's, you know, somebody repeating it, but not putting together what it actually means.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
It's not just dental plan. It is dental plan and Lisa needs braces and the connection not being made.
Yes. Yeah.
Shorthand good. Steven writes, "Hey guys, with the holidays upon us, I'm spending much more time on the road delivering packages and have been spending that time listening to older Duckfeed shows. I really enjoyed Heartbeat City, and I'm working through File Underwater along with all of the REM albums for the first time." Oh, wow. This got me thinking. Have there been any shows that you guys have thought of that never came to be? Any of them make it to planning or even recording? You guys are amazing, and with every show, I look forward to listening to. Real Lich Hours. Thanks.
Thanks, Steven. It's out now. It's been out for a bit. This is an old question, which is why we do these.
Yes.
We had ideas that we've thrown around, but nothing that made it to the recording stage. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're capable of recording something and not putting it out.
And
ideas are cheap, you know, billions of ideas, and things that just, we both already work full time and are not looking to give ourselves a extra part-time job. Lots.
Yeah. Can't think of anyone specifically, even that we've like talked about as being like a potential thing to do. You know, there was the idea of doing a bonfire side chat treatment on Final Fantasy, but we decided not to do that because that would have been torture.
Yeah, I would have died. We both would have died, though. It would have been a really long way to convert you to my side of that.
Yes.
Which would have been the plus side. Like, it would have been like a 10-year project to get one more ally in this war.
Hey, Gary, I need you to not think about our working relationship as cult deprogramming.
It's not even deprogramming. It's just recruitment. I'm in the cult in this scenario. And then there's things that we talk about. Like, I would like to talk about review at some point, like once we in the TV slot. That'll be quick. There's 23 episodes of that show or whatever. That'll be really fast. But like that show deserves talking about, even if it's not going to necessarily gain an audience.
Agreed.
Things like that. So welcome to REM.
Yeah. Hope you enjoy.
Batea says, "I said this before, but is there some way we can follow along with your characters visually in Real Lich Hours? I know it's more work for you guys, but maybe like one per act and another at the end. Lol, I just realized we never got this for Elden Ring dudes. And I just like to ask what build/class a person is in the same way people ask about horoscopes. Gives me insight." We are doing character updates on that show, in terms of character build. In terms of following along geographically, visually, picture of the characters. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be mean.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I don't have a good screenshot apparatus. I have to copy a print screen into Microsoft Paint, and then I have to trim it because I have two monitors. So I have to trim the other monitor and then save it and then upload it, which I understand isn't that many steps, but doing it for each thing would be kind of annoying. I think posting one picture of our characters, like facial structure and stuff, is reasonable. I don't want to do updates for outfits and gear and shit, I guess.
No, for fashion souls.
I also am blind to fashion souls. I don't, neither of us do fashion souls really. I just wear the best equipment. It's not our thing.
Yeah. It's not something that I personally find especially interesting, which is not to discount that somebody else does find it interesting. Like I could post a screenshot of it to Twitter or Blue Sky, but that's just going to fall off the timeline.
We'll put up one on the Patreon. And then that's the last you're going to hear about this. I put up both of the characters and stuff. Liv described my Dark Urge character as Mini Mandzukas. Because he's a tiny little Jason Mandzukas gnome guy.
Nice.
I don't, not trying to be withholding. It's just, what does Jar Farters Incorporated say, Cole?
Sometimes I have nightmares about what life was like before Jark Farters Incorporated came on the scene.
I love being able to, in the beginning of Metal Gear Solid 2, they talk about how basically every .com has its own Metal Gear, and that includes Jar Farters Incorporated. They can get you a Metal Gear or a fart in a jar overnight, like Zappos.com.
Whether you want it or not. Is the thing. Jar Farters Incorporated says, "Hey guys, longtime fan, new patron here. Welcome. First off, I want it known that I really missed the opening skits. They weren't all bangers, but it was often a way for me to get to engage with an episode when I didn't know anything about the game going in. Have you ever thought about bringing it back? Maybe for the exclusive episode each month. Consider it next time you find yourselves in the deliberation room. Oh, and Final Fantasy VIII should be the next one that you guys cover.
We have not considered bringing them back. I think we talked about this a bunch where we kind of ran out of inspiration.
Yeah.
And then the extra time that took, work kind of grew to fill in that spot.
Yes.
Since we stopped doing those, we do more shows generally.
Mm-hmm.
Those weren't like super odious or anything. Sometimes those did not take very much work, but sometimes they took some. Mm-hmm. And it was just energy that like we put elsewhere.
Yeah. No.
Now. I appreciate that. Like everyone who liked them has a special place in my heart. At least as many people dislike them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a first impression thing. So people would be like, hey, check out this podcast, but you need to know to skip the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And we want more people to listen to the show because it's our jobs now. so it's just kind of a tricky proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
I don't know. I have affection too.
Mm-hmm. I've got a, it was fun. But I think that time has passed, you know, any of those stray observations that would have become a skit just kind of get worked into the episode too, without needing to write it. So there is that.
It's also worth noting. You can get a lot of that energy in Abject Suffering.
Yes.
Where they're improvised and even more unhinged.
Yeah.
Our summer console RPG is picked out for this year. Mm-hmm. It's not Final Fantasy VIII. And if we're going to do another Final Fantasy game of the classic ones, I'm probably more interested in 9 than 8.
Okay.
But even then I'm not super interested. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Eight has interesting systems. I hate all of the characters. I think every character in it's more boring than the last. Like I defy anyone to think of anything interesting about any character in Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like Final Fantasy
Quistis. Like, love Quistis.
She's the a teacher.
who predates on her students. And then the rest. Like, I don't know. It's got a really bland story to me. I like the systems though. Like I'm with you in the systems. I think that part's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah. Mm-hmm. Steven says, the McElroys have been doing a weekly stream where they've played through Super Mario World, Donkey Kong Country, and now Crash Bandicoot 2 while splitting the controls across three of them. One jumps, one walks, one does fireballs and sprints. Would any of the Duckfeed folk consider doing a challenge run like this for Duckfest or as a one-off? We did.
Mm-hmm.
We did this during, there's more to the question. I didn't scroll down.
Yeah.
I think the Wild Energy of Gary Cole and Will podcast put under the pressure of this challenge would create a potentially flawless diamond. We did this during Duckfest West this year with Super
Duck
Mario
Stream
World,
West.
Duck yeah. Stream West, with me and Gwen and Will and Nick kind of swapping. This was immensely fun. I was shocked how fun this was.
I watched at least the first session of the first session of that. I was losing my fucking mind with how frustrating it looked.
It takes a second to get it because you have to get out of like, oh, I'm not watching. Like it feels all the world like you don't have to do anything. I did jump for this, but I got good at it. Like, I'm not trying to brag, but, like, I got pretty good at it. We got further than the McElroys got in their, like, weeks of stream, basically, in that the first couple-hour session. But they were also really high, when it is my understanding.
Yeah. They're also doing it over the internet as well.
Yes. Yeah, that'll do something, for sure. And they're less handsome than us. than me and Will. But we dream teamed it, and it was very fun.
Oh,
surprised by how fun this was.
Yeah.
No.
I was just watching it hurting every time you guys failed because I felt frustration in your stead the thing. It wasn't that you were like doing bad and that was painful to me. It was just like, oh man, I get it.
It just, it changes. What it does is same way like a randomizer recontextualizes holy spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just know this game so well that it made it fun. The idea that they're doing it with Crash Bandicoot 2, now that would kill somebody.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a game that's not a holy space.
No.
That's a very frustrating game with very, very demanding, weird jumps where you have to use coyote time and shit.
Yeah.
Same thing with Donkey Kong Country, even though I know people like that. That's a much more demanding game. Super Mario World is the perfect amount of rigor.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Kind of thing. And perfect amount of just, like, knowing it.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like home.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Moving on to topics. Let's try and get all these if we can.
Let's see what we can do. Yeah. Let's try to lightning round them if we can.
Douglas says, are there any topics, properties, movements, or even times of your life that you look back on with melancholy, that you wanted to turn out better, that you wanted to exist, that you wanted a different end to their story? Any tips on reconciling these feelings if they exist? They give a
there's elaboration on that, so it doesn't sound like,
yeah.
yes, moving on. I have been sad.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I get severe melancholy when I think about BioWare and what they've become. This was a scrappy little company that produced some of the most well-loved games of a generation and seemed to have a real future. But after EA's acquisition and a torturous dismantling, they're essentially dead at this point. And then they have a TV example. I think we're going to keep it to games here, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I get disappointed in this kind of trajectory. Like, I'm trying to keep it out of real life. You know, the first question seems like that. And like, of course, you got sad points in your life.
Right. But it's
not fun for Watch Out for Fireball's Dispatch for me to be like, I wish I had never fought with my mom. I don't think that's what I'm not trying to call out Douglas. I don't think that's what Douglas is angling for. But like,
Christ.
You know, that's a little bit beyond the remit.
You know, the thing about life is every moment that passes is another one that you're eventually going to have to mourn.
It sure was fucked up me to be annoyed when she called. I'll chew on that for the rest of the day. You know, I know that's not what Douglas is trying to do.
Right.
This is hard for me to say as a specific thing. Like, mm-hmm. BioWare is a good example of that. But what I really loved about BioWare was really Black Isle.
Yeah.
You know, it was a basically a different company mm-hmm. at that point. You know, and generally I'll feel this about a standing. Oh, here we go. Here's mine. Irrational Games.
Oh, shit.
I loved BioWare or BioShock. I loved the Freedom Force games, even though they're like absolutely the best seven out of tens now. But mm-hmm. I love them. I love the idea of them. They felt like a very creative, vital company.
Yeah.
And then one fucking maniac tanked it into the dick.
Yes.
Like, just absolutely dog watered it to shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think about this in terms of lost eras, right? So mm-hmm. you think, like, you know, for somebody who likes console RPGs, basically anything between the PS2 and the Xbox 360 generation is just really fucking lost. Yeah. And it was a rough era for a lot of Japanese companies in particular, right? Took them a very long time to actually get their legs under that. I think something really similar is happening from like the mid-teens into today, where there are a bunch of studios that could have delivered really amazing stuff if they weren't chasing after live service shit. Bethesda, right? You know, with that, I'm thinking of like Rocksteady, for fuck's sake, with that god-awful looking Suicide Squad.
You know, say Shadow of War before it got patched out of it and stuff. Like, this is a thing where the bean counters who are saying this is the only way to make money is to make something somebody's permanent game. We have to vie for that position.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And all that ties into the perennial, like, budgets be too high kind of thing. You know, if it's going to cost that much to make a game, there's grotesque incentive to make it make more money, more and more money. That is bad for art.
If Spider-Man 2 hasn't turned a profit, then what are we fucking doing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and that is I like that game a whole lot. Mm-hmm. It's real fun. It's real long. It's very generous.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not somebody's forever game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really great answer. I think we're kind of living in it. You know, and I would love indie games get around that, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing that happens with, you know, I thought you were going to transition that to console RPGs, and I was like, no, console RPGs are in a good spot right now because of indies.
No. I offer that up as a framing for like a lost era, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just gonna, like, the thing, the reason I brought that up, the way, I mean, that's germane, is that indies are the salvation for all this shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in a general sense, any of these things, so like BioWare, you think like, oh man, it sucks they did that. Somebody else is doing it. They're just doing it with lower budget. Mm-hmm. The secret is lower budget. Yep. Less money is always the artistic panacea yep. to all this shit. Even down to, you know, like Larian had tons of money for Baldur's mm-hmm. Gate 3. Like they're not a small studio by any means, but they were, and again, there's disparity around this, but like arguably more independent than some, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of a studio. That's, they're not owned by EA.
Right.
That's the secret mm-hmm. to most of the shit. And that's not just like EA hating. It's just like, it just makes better art.
Mm-hmm.
You avoid a lot of this stuff.
Sub in whatever studio you happen to dislike, Ubisoft.
Any of the big three.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they're making it worse. You mm-hmm. know, you look at like any of those things and there's just better versions of them. Mm-hmm. If you have less money involved.
Yep.
Yeah. It's gross. and then the reason why that isn't working right now is because gamers love graphics.
Gamers, it sucks. Gamers do love graphics, and they love being able to buy a game and play it forever. And they love being able to rank up their profile. If they rank it up faster, if they happen to buy the right snack food.
Yep. It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
Like it's not a good audience. It's not a good medium we've hitched our wagon to.
Mainstream game stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like this is like I regretted making that joke about getting double XP weekends for buying Little Caesars or whatever, because that's basically the same version of complaining about these people just play Madden, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But it's there's an extent to which that is just like totemic of like a bad business practice, right? Like how they're like, okay, what's the new Call of Duty? Well, here's the thing. It's named after at least three. It has the same name as at least three ones that came out previously.
Yeah.
And also they have Battle Royale mixed in with maybe Extraction Shooter. It's not really a game. It's a launcher.
Yes. it's a wrapper. It's the license to go to a website that you bought. Yeah. It is true. That's bad business practices and stuff. I don't think the consumer is entirely blameless in this.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
The people who are getting the Totinos in order to get a free battle pass weekend or whatever mm-hmm. Are to blame as well. You know, like yep. people, the consumer's not helpless in this scenario. I'm not like free market guy.
No,
obviously,
no,
it's a complicated problem with many authors.
It's a self-reinforcing cycle as well, you know?
Yeah. Gross. So that's a good answer for that, I think.
I think so.
Chapel says, suggestion for our topic, darkness in games in terms of tone. Obviously, there's a ton of affection for dark on this network or for horror on this network, but I think it'd make for an interesting discussion to explore the line between cool dark and grim dark. When does it become dark for its own sake instead of to make an interesting or scary point?
Oh, I'm trying to think of a more effective answer for this than you know it when you see it.
It's really, you know it when you see it. It's also, so this is something in like some conversations I've had in the Slack and something I realized about myself. Just for Gary, no prescriptivism. I am less sensitive to grimdark than most people.
Yeah.
I don't get mad about it. Mm-hmm. Like if something is like edgy grimdark, a lot of times I just think it's funny at worst. You know, like I'm like, oh, you know, it's the darkness, like that game, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm never like, who is this? Who is this? You know, what is this grimdark shit?
They're trying too hard kind of stuff.
It's very, very rare that I dislike that, because the way that my tastes have changed, I'm much more sensitive to going the other direction, like, mm-hmm. like a wholesome core or like what if a frog had a playdate kind of thing is more inherently annoying to me than, my name is Dirk Justice. I was a cop until one day it all went away.
Yeah.
Like one of those is more annoying to me
mm-hmm.
At this point.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm the standard though. I think people get really frustrated mm-hmm. with grimdark stuff, and the tides are turning where people are really sick of it. I just, sometimes I'm just like, that's funny. And other times it feels neutral.
Yeah.
To me.
If it's unrelenting with the way they hit it, and especially if it starts impeding play or pacing, then it gets to be like a real bummer. But yeah, I'm generally in the lane of like, okay, just if this goes far enough, it eventually wraps around to being Slayer's X, right?
Yes.
Like, except they don't know that they're in on the joke. Think about the Abject Suffering that we did about the Wolverine button mashing game.
Yeah, right. Where he holds up somebody's head and puts it into a helicopter blade. Some people are going to be like, that's fucking, that they're just going to roll their eyes and have an intense feeling of revulsion at that. Mm-hmm. And I've wrapped around where I'm kind of like, that's kind of badass. All right, let's, just I'm like, a dog with a chew toy. Like,
yeah,
let me engage with this stuff.
Yeah, you know? Well, we had a whole discussion on that about like the difference between a fun Mortal Kombat fatality and one that feels like too much. We've had cousins of this conversation before. I guess it all comes back to for me like the distinction that I wish I could draw more eloquently between Fear and Hunger 1 and Lisa the Painful, right?
Yes.
Where like one of those works for me and the other one doesn't. And I can put it on some of the treatment of the sexual assault stuff and, you know, the way one treats it as a status effect, blah, blah, blah. Go see that episode where I fumbled around with it more. But yeah, like as far as darkness goes, if it gets into we're constantly interrupting things to give you a jump scare because of how fucking great our thing is, that isn't like a subject matter or a tone problem. That is
that's just pacing, and that's a craft issue,
right?
Yeah, like there are things that go along with either extreme of the spectrum that I find, you know, if you think of the worst of either of these things, they're going to be bad.
Yes,
you know, it's very hard to name the exact line.
Yeah.
For this, I know when it's gone too far, and I know that my sensitivities are slightly less than most people's for this. At the same time, I couldn't name a line.
Yeah,
you know, for it, it's just I just like I don't know. I'm more annoyance is one of those things. Like, you know, thinking about the point, we think about the "I get it" button, but another thing I've been thinking about, you know, in terms of games, and this can apply to any media, is the point in which you're exhausted. Right?
This isn't cute anymore. Yeah, just tiresome. It's the tiresome line. Yeah.
The tiresome line, right? And you get to the point where it's just like, and this can express itself in a million ways. It can express itself through the story. Like, this is the fifth time a character has made this point. Mm-hmm. You know, it can express itself through gameplay, like, oh, the size of this Sokoban level in Baba Is You is the exhaustion point. I look at this and I think, God, I just don't want to do that. I'd rather go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the line, you know, we're talking about here, and it is, you know, when you see it, because it's something you feel rather than think about.
Yeah,
I think, which is kind of a non-answer, but I don't think I have a better one.
No. I like grimdark stuff because it's another axis on which it can be creative. See, you know, Wolverine holding somebody up into a helicopter blade.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
Fangorious, like fun. Again, I'm a dog with a chew toy. Do I want that in real life? No. But it I'm going to media for stuff I don't get in real life. You know, the argument, like the anti-grimdark argument you get a lot is like, oh, real life is so grim. I don't want to spend time in video games in periods like that. And I'm like, the kind of grim real life is not the same kind of grim as Wolverine holding somebody's head into a helicopter blade, unless you have a way more interesting life than I do.
Yeah.
Like the kind
of grim memoir.
Absolutely write a memoir. Join the X-Men. If you know, the kind of grimdark my real life is, like reading about anti-trans bathroom bills and shit, they don't make games about that. And I don't see the kind of fun, you know, the darkness or blood or dusk kind of stuff doesn't interface with, you know, the end of democracy, like things I'm actually worried about.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, they're different axes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's Jared say?
Jared says, hi diddly ho there. My wife recently contracted the latest strain of COVID, and she's using the time to get into Hollow Knight. It got me thinking of all the media I've used to get through times of unhealth. When I was sick as a kid, it meant that I got to watch The Price is Right. Now that I'm an adult, I still get to watch The Price is Right, but I also get caught up on some reading, a show, or a game I've been putting off. When I was separated from my wife, my habits changed greatly, as they should have. I found a good friend who came by once a week to check in on me, and we played through Enter the Gungeon together. Through frustration and a bit of fears on my own part, we were able to beat the dragon a few times. my wife and I have reconciled, and I still have Enter the Gungeon to enjoy because of those many bittersweet moments that I shared with a friend. What media have you turned into? Have you turned to in the past? And what do you turn to nowadays when you are in unhealth, either mental or physical? Thanks for the show.
No, thank you. Mm-hmm. We talked about depression gaming tons.
Yep.
You know, so let's pivot to physical health.
Yes.
Like, what do you like playing when you're sick?
Anything that's not especially demanding. I don't really play games when I'm sick, if I'm being honest with you. Like, if I have a very bad cold, or if I'm having like a headache, or especially like a stomach bug, looking at things is difficult. Looking at things and focusing on things is not necessarily what I want to do. I am much more of a couch languisher and listening to a television show that I'm comfortable with. You know, kind of person. I just want to make time melt, you know, in the past. So back when I was in fifth grade, so this would have been 1999, I got pneumonia really bad. I got pneumonia really bad that I was out of school for a month.
Okay.
Had to have like tutors and shit. It was really rough. And I'll have to go to the emergency room with it or whatever. Turned out that was also briefly after the Christmas where I got Ocarina of Time. So I forever associate Ocarina of Time with this period of time where I was out of school and desperately wanted to be back to school because you can only be out sick for so long before it becomes too much.
You know?
I kind of want to see my friends or whatever. But like that was the time in which I beat that game. Was when I was kind of going through that, you know, when I was not completely knocked out by the medicine or coughing so hard that, I was in physical pain. Yeah.
I had similar memories when I was young, being sick and renting Final Fantasy III on the SNES through there, just being very sick. I had a weird childhood. I was kept out of school sometimes because my mom had stuff going on. And I wasn't sick, you know, like we were moving or something going, I don't know, you know, things like that. So it's a little bit all over the place, stuff like that. Nowadays, weirdly, when I was recovering from my first time, my shoulder injury, video game I could play was Spider-Man on PS4. I played it standing up in my office because that was the only ergonomic thing that my body would allow me to do. And that's very relieving. That's like a very strong memory. I'm just like, what a straight up the middle video game. To come back to video games with.
Yeah.
You know, like, man, this is a video game. Boy, oh boy, is this a video game. Look at that map. I've done some of the stuff on it. Oh, wait, I've done more of the stuff on it. You know, it's just like it was.
What's this new icon?
It was very a video game, you know, which helped a lot. That's probably my strongest association there.
Yeah.
And then finally, for this, Elliot says, suggestion for a topic, input reading and Souls-likes. I've started playing Lies of P, and I must say that I'm impressed. It's very slick in the hands, and the developers have made a really magnificent game. While I have some criticisms, the thing I dislike the most that it has brought over from Dark Souls and Elden Ring is input reading, the automatic reaction to a player pressing a button, attack or Estus, etc. I feel input reading is anathema to Souls combat. Nowhere was it more egregious than in Elden Ring. Often you'd hear fans of these games say that it's fair, but the game rewards you for patience and strategies, and I must agree 90% of the time. But I feel input reading betrays the core concept of Souls-likes. Often in these games, and Lies of P, you'll learn an enemy moveset. However, these movesets will iterate or bank up combos if you press a button. This becomes frustrating as certain weapon types or playstyles will be at a disadvantage. The time you have to attack after a move is an opportunity to deal damage, and due to input reading, all of your strategy and learning of enemy movesets can become redundant. Think you know that a two-hit combo perfectly? Well, you do, until you press attack at the end of the combo, and a surprise third retaliation attack is chained together. I understand this might be an AI thing, but I play enough of these games to know that enemy attacks do not have to be based on your input. How do you, or the wider community, feel about input reading? Is this simply another strategy that you have to learn? To elaborate real quick, just so in case anybody doesn't know what Elliot means. So in like Dark Souls, for example, the enemies will follow an AI routine. You know, like if the character is not doing anything, they have a 40% chance of doing this and a 60% chance of doing this.
Yeah.
But if you press attack, they will change it. Mm-hmm. They know, the computer knows what you did and responds supernaturally fast to it. Not like the avatar, you know, not like the character you're fighting would respond to seeing it, but just like a perfect little computer man responds with math here.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a bunk, you know, this is probably part of a bigger, me wishing that Souls likes were easier because difficulty is not the most interesting thing about them.
Yeah.
And, this is something that they do more of now because they are in a difficulty arms race, you know, like everything has to be harder than, you know, going back to Demon Souls or Dark Souls now feels very quaint. You can be the Taurus demon in like five hits and that's just unacceptable. Now, every boss, you know, we just did Blasphemous too. Every boss has to be chip damage.
Yep.
You know, you have to hit an enemy at least 100 times or it doesn't count.
Nope. You know, otherwise you didn't really beat it. Yeah.
You didn't really beat it. This is kind of part of an overall developers, I think, trying to keep up with a challenge hungry audience.
Yeah.
Here. So I agree. I don't like it. It doesn't bother me necessarily more than like hyper armor or crazy tanky health bars or four phases, like things like that. I don't like, I just consider it part of a malicious little toolbox that devs now have in their corner now to make games less fun for Gary Butterfield in particular.
Yeah. You never want to just like default to calling something fake, but it does feel like a fake difficulty kind of thing. It's also one that you just kind of have to get used to. And when it is most transparent that they're doing it, it feels especially frustrating.
It violates the fantasy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like just, if I'm an avatar and I'm playing against artificial intelligence, I want to believe that Margit is doing the things.
Yeah. I want to believe that the enemy is capable of making a mistake of being a little bit too slow. You know, this kind of combat, when it is least interesting to me, in its, you know, Sekiro kind of form, which is not a game that I dislike, but is an extreme.
It's a game we use as an example a lot because we talk about it at length, and it's a developer we know is capable of doing different. You know, it's a really useful example, even though it is not the worst.
Yeah,
this example. I think it's a game that if we both were voting, we both like that game.
Yeah,
you know, in a general sense, it's just our least favorite of a very tough field.
Yes, but that combat is not as interesting to me because. Every single action is an input that has a perfect output that matches it, right?
Yeah.
That it expects you to kind of get, and, you know, to do every time. And that is the entirety of learning it as opposed to getting a broader concept of the, either your moveset capabilities or the space or any number of things that are just more personally interesting to me. And so like, anything that makes it so the computer is just taking anything that is input from me and then giving back a perfect output just feels like they're drawing me closer to that line of playing entirely in that space. This is not, it's not like specific to Souls-likes. I think that it is a betrayal of a certain ethos that, you know, people say about Souls-likes, but this is actually a problem in a bunch of stuff. You know, imagine any number of like third person shooters or like, you know, zombie shooter kind of things where like every time, oh God, this is terrible in Dead Space. Actually, every time you're about to aim for something, it knows by reading your input what you're about to aim for. So the thing just kind of like does like a little jump to the side.
Yeah.
Not actually. Yeah. You know, it's like, I wasn't even aiming at that. And they already decided to move to the side. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. They're reading your mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. Yomi that the computer is doing, but it's not Yomi because there's no mind behind it.
Right. It is practicing based on information that I do not know that I am giving it. And that is that kind of difficulty is less interesting to me than, you know, again, engaging with the space, engaging with my capabilities, blah, blah, blah.
Or engaging with the fantasy too.
Yes.
You know, I want these mindless necromorphs to act like mindless necromorphs. It's one of the reasons why out of the Resident Evil 4 likes, Resident Evil 4 is so much better than Dead Space.
Mm-hmm.
Because the enemies scale up in more interesting ways than that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to cheat. They do it through encounter design.
Yeah.
And like kind of room design. They don't do it through just giving the enemies superpowers.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, you know, not only just is that like a thing in those games, but it's also obviously a thing in like character action.
Yep.
It's a thing in fighting games as a thing. Basically, any of the challenge, you know, seeking genres have this problem because if you're trying to emulate a person mm-hmm. the other side. You're trying to emulate Yomi, you know, the concept of anticipating, you know, your opponent's move. You can't do that. Like mm-hmm. that's a human construct. You have to find a way to fake it.
Yes.
You know, and what's fascinating about it is in trying to fake that humanity, they made something that's way less human.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that you can exploit this stuff. So for example, like in Elden Ring, right? Because of input reading, you can, one of the ways you can cheese Malenia is with the bolt, like the thing, the portable ballista.
Yeah.
By aiming it off to the side and then moving it towards her. She will always react to that input every single time and then just face tank the shot.
Yeah.
They may have patched that out, but for a long time, that was like the cheese strategy for that. Mm-hmm. It's like devs outsmarting themselves with this stuff. And it's just because of people who like can't get enough of Returnal and won't like it if they can't, you know, or like, you know, any challenge fuck game.
Yeah, yeah.
And just will feel unsatisfied if they beat something too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, for me, it doesn't support the fantasy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what kills it.
Yeah, breaks the illusion, you know? And you know, it's not entirely necessary. We talk about breaking things down to the wireframe all the time, but it's also not unnecessary. It's not you can't throw it away. It's not disposable.
It's not a way I really enjoy having it broken. And it's in pursuit, and part of it, this is subjective, but for me, the reason why I don't like it is in pursuit of something I don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that I want, you know, even like a tactical game, like even a game I really like. You know, it's pretty rare that I'm like, there's like a couple tactical games I've been like, this is too easy,
mm-hmm.
but I will still play through a Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, you know, from time to time, something like of that caliber. And that's an easy game.
No.
You know, just, I really rare that I'm like, do cheat me to make this harder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never thinking that.
Yeah. I mean, then I just, because I'm playing it, this is top of mind. Age of Empires 2 has this has this as well. You will never be able to micro as well as a computer can, because you can only focus on a certain number of things at a time, and it can always, you know, respond by controlling every individual thing. So, you know, you will be trying to shoot something with ballistics, and it will, you know, oh yeah, that's where your mouse is. That's where you're going to aim. So we're just going to go out of the way before you even click. Yeah.
It gets rid of all kinds of cool shit you can do. I remember playing Warcraft 2 way back in the day. And when I had come upon the strategy of killing peasants, like putting a ballista behind somebody's forest and killing their peasants to like ruin their economy. I was young. I was playing this contemporaneous, right? So like whenever Warcraft 2 came out, big gaming moment for Gary in terms of like understanding strategy. And then getting to a level where I did that, and a different group of people, like a different, it wasn't the same orcs or the same humans or whatever, just immediately countered that as if they knew it were going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was just a function of the difficulty going up.
Yeah.
You know, but like, I don't know, fuck that. Like, let me feel cool and smart for figuring out a thing, you know, and have them react afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. This ties into a lot of balance stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, things that people do to try to balance things because they're very scared of like a player exploiting something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And that also feels misguided to me.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing is a bummer. I also do not like input reading.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a suggestion for how to do it better. I think still do it, but add some slop to it.
Yeah. You know?
And just, I'm sure this is a problem. You know, this is a technique that has evolved. But again, if you're going to do it, hide it.
I think a lot about the awesomeness in Half-Life, where the first bullet from every enemy is programmed to miss.
Mm-hmm.
What a good idea.
That's a really good idea.
You know, they're hit-scan weapons. Hit-scan weapons fucking suck. You don't have a chance to get past them with that, like, or, you know, to avoid them. Like, make a miss and give you that chance.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's Make your AI dumber. I want dumber AIs from smaller teams with worse graphics made for less money.
That was really nitty gritty.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the dispatch roundup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. You've already done the stuff, so just watch for the dispatch prompts to go up. Refill that bucket.
Yeah, please. We will see you next quarter with another roundup.
Yeehaw.
Join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Gwen, and yeehaw.